Everyone, thanks for joining us on an episode here of The Catholic Gentleman. This is a unique guest exclusive edition. I am so thankful to be joined by Patrick O'Hearn and Brian Fager, two great men, to talk about the issue of grief, talk about the issue of loss of a child and how grief affects us. And by loss of a child, we're talking about everything from miscarriage to stillborn to toddler to child to a teenager to an adult child as well. All this suffering that men experience in silence. And I tell you, there are so many layers to this onion of the loss of a child that we hope to get into today and we hope to dialogue about. So to kind of set the stage here, I want to introduce both Patrick O'Hearn and Brian Fager, as well as a brief bit of my story and how this touches our hearts. So I was looking to do this conversation now for quite literally almost 3 years. And in fact, when I wanted to do it about 3 years ago, I was advised against it because maybe it was going to be too startling or uncomfortable. And so I ended up just doing a conversation, or I ended up doing a talk about suffering that reached quite a few people. But this idea of loss of a child has always been close to my heart. And so who better than to bring in Patrick O'Hearn and Brian Fager, who are the co-authors of this book, The Grief of Dads. And they went out with this book. It's a phenomenal book, but we're actually going to dive into this exact topic here, The Grief of Dads. And so Patrick O'Hearn, he's a father. He's also a Catholic author and writer. He's lost some children as well. Brian Fager is a father. He's a scientist and a medical writer. He has likewise lost some children as well. And I have lost some children as well. And the grief that has gone through to this and the struggles that we have all faced, I'm sure, have a lot of common threads, yet uniqueness, depending on where we were in life and who we are. And so I'd love to just start out with you, Patrick, and I'd like to hear a little bit of your story about what inspired you to start writing this book and a little bit about your story of your loss.
Yeah, so I felt the Holy Spirit, you know, put this idea, you know, it actually even started before this with another book called Nursery of Heaven that I wrote with a female named Cassie Everett, and it was on miscarriage, stillbirth, and infant loss. And then as I met Brian once, we were at this Opus Dei retreat, and we kind of were dialoguing, and I just felt there's something more for men. You know, the other book that I had, I think it really spoke to a lot of women, and I feel like there's got to be something for men. So that's just our dialogue together. It actually came together on a Zoom call. We were kind of praying, like, we should do a book for men, put men's stories in there, saints that are male saints. And then, so that was kind of the impetus for the book. And then, you know, in terms of my own losses, you know, my wife suffered, you know, two miscarriages. You know, she's around 7 weeks or so for each of them, and it happened within a span of 18 months. So she had the one, and then like a year later or so, you know, another miscarriage. And we later found out several years later that it was due to toxic mold at our house. It was the worst kind of toxic mold. So that made it even, I mean, that was kind of like even gut-wrenching, because I just to learn that. And then there's a period of about 6 years of infertility because of that, you know, with the miscarriages and the mold. And, but wow, thanks be to God, we were able to, you know, after we got out of our house, fixed it up, sold it, we were able to conceive another child 6 years later. So, that's kind of a little bit about, my story.
Oh, Patrick, I really appreciate that. Yeah. That is, it's gut wrenching. And I imagine there's more that we're going to go into about that. Yeah. So Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about, your story and, what got you inspired to be a part of this project?
Yeah, I'll start with the project first. It was, you know, totally the Holy Spirit. Patrick and I met at the Opus Dei retreat, and you just hit it off. We're the same age. We went to school like 10 miles from each other in college, and it just of course formed this immediate bond, particularly over the child loss. And through our relationship just developing it over the years, you know, got in contact with Redbird Ministries, who supported the book, and you were on a podcast with them, and, you know, like Patrick said, it just kind of went from there. So it's been a really great and healing experience as well, particularly, you know, Patrick's friendship, and we can get into more of that later as far as the benefit of friendship and grief. But yeah, it's been a good journey. And as far as my story, I've been married 14 years now, and about, I guess, 10 years ago, we had our first miscarriage. And, you know, I kind of thought like, oh, well, you know, maybe that's normal. Because I'd heard that, you know, many people have a miscarriage on their first attempt or conception. And then it was about 2 years later, we struggled with some, like, I guess you would call secondary infertility, and had another child, and lost him at about 8 to 9 weeks, same as the first. And then about 2 years later, had another miscarriage, and we came to find out that it was a girl, particularly because of this chromosomal abnormality that was potentially the driver of the misconception. And we named her Hannah, and she was the third. And then, thanks be to God, 2 years later, conceived again, and bore my earthly son, Robert.
Yeah.
And he's been just, you know, a total blessing, a little miracle, I think. So.
Amen. Wow. Well, and thanks be to God for all of them. And I appreciate you sharing that. And I do think it's important for me to let our listeners know a little bit about my story and why this is so close to my heart, because I didn't have a book like this. I didn't have men in my life that had necessarily experienced or were even willing to dialogue and cope with the grief. And I got all of the, oh, you just have a little angel praying for you in heaven and all that stuff. And frankly, that didn't help me at all. Like, when a priest was telling me that, I wanted to clock him. I was so frustrated at this notion. And I get it came from a place of not knowing what to say. And I hope we'll be able to talk about that. But when my wife and I first conceived, we had him. He was 8 weeks when we miscarried. And so, and I remember experiencing a lot of grief because the excitement was full on in my life. We were newlyweds, and this happened faster than, you know, we were open to God's will, but this was definitely, we just heard all the stories about how it takes long to conceive often, and, you know, and don't expect, you know, this to happen right away. And so we were on fire. We were already named him Raphael. We had already been, you know, picturing everything with him. And then when we lost him, it was heart-wrenching. It was the most, at that time, grievous moment of my life. And it was, it struck me deep. And so then we got pregnant again, and we lost Timothy at 7 weeks. And then we started getting into NAPRO technology and learning a little bit about that, learning a little bit about progesterone, and but just a little bit. And then we had our daughter, my firstborn, Gemma. And Gemma's been with us now for 12 years. She just turned 12 in the month of February. And so that was great. And we thought we were out. Now we've kind of figured it out. And then I ended up having two more back-to-back miscarriages after Gemma. And so we had four miscarriages, Adrian and Benedict. And I was numb. I was, and now you bring about it in your book, and I was just super numb, and I was angry. I was really angry. And then we ended up having four other children born because of NAPRO, thanks be to God. And we ended up having my daughter Gianna, my son David, my son Stephen, and my son Joseph. Joseph was a miracle baby for different reasons. He had a viral abnormality inside his inside the womb. And then we ended up having three more miscarriages back to back right after that. And so the last miscarriage were twins, and they one of them passed, his heartbeat stopped at 9 weeks, and the other one was 16 and a half weeks, and we had to go through full labor and delivery. And I got to hold my son, who was, you know, 8-9 inches. And that broke me. That psychologically broke me. And that actually just happened a year and a half ago. Did the tests and everything like that, and nothing came back, you know, no real cause, you know, and that was incredibly tough, and we had to cope with that. I'm happy to say on November 2nd of last year, I welcomed another child, Dominic, and he made it to full term, but all the anxieties, all the worries throughout that. So I actually have 13 kids, as I like to say. I've got 6 with me, 7 already entrusted the infinite love and mercy of God. I used to say, I've got 13 kids. Everybody was like, you know, they were always shocked by that. And so then I rechanged it to say 6 with me, 7 already entrusted the infinite love and mercy of God. If they want to do the math, they can. But yeah, that's a little bit of my story. So it was definitely, it has been the most grief my wife and I have ever gone through and experienced in our life. And I do want to thank you both right here at the beginning, without going any further, for writing this, because something like this would have been a huge tool to help me get through all of that and helped me along that journey. So thank you both for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing your story.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and I hope more and more people can do that and can hear that. So I want to start with, again, as I mentioned, there's these layers of emotions and each man experiences things a little bit differently, but I would like to ask both of you, and how do men experience grief? What are some of the common indicators of grief, or common outward signs of grief that men experience? And listeners, I want you guys to kind of connect yourself to some of these points of grief as you maybe have experienced them. So, Patrick, Brian, I don't know which one would like to take the lead on that first point here.
Yeah, I'll start. I think pervasive across child loss, it's this loss that that nobody really understands until you've gone through it. And you know, it varies in degrees based on, I think, how long, you know, the child's been with you. But nonetheless, like, it's still very unnatural to lose a child. And I think across all the different types of child loss, is this type of numbing and really delayed grief, if it happens at all, because many men, and this is across literature, we talk about this in chapter one, but many men really put forth their wife as their primary responsibility, like to take care of her grief, because she's dealing with it in such a physical way. You know, particularly from our, you know, our stories and miscarriage, like dealing with it that way. And so really men focus on that grief and supporting their wife, and, you know, this idea that, you know, they need to be strong and resolute, and unwavering, and which isn't quite right. As you go through, you learn that, you know, you really should be vulnerable with your wife, and it helps with the healing process. But I think that's probably the biggest thread that all men deal with in the grieving stages.
Yeah, without question. It was absolutely the point that I was most focused on. And I think out of our husband, our spousal love for our wives, that can be very natural, right? But at the same time, like you were saying, there's this feeling that men can't appear weak because that would like add some sort of burden onto our wife. And so we don't confide in her. I know that very much. And for me, it started to develop in a lot of anger and a lot of like, not necessarily related to this issue, but this unresolved grief just kind of started bringing that up. And you mentioned something, Brian. You said grief, if it is experienced. And I don't want to jump in necessarily to unresolved grief, but is it that men will literally just compartmentalize that and not allow themselves to have that emotion? Is that a reality?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, there's the clinician Jonathan Sumter in our book. I think he may mention that, and also, you know, if experientially and through, you know, the research literature, that does happen. You know, men compartmentalize it, and if they don't, you know, let's see, if they don't show it in any way that you would think of grieving, like through, you know, the physical symptoms of like being sad or depressed or crying or talking about it, that compartmentalization can either be just hiding it, numbing it, or using it and to drive other activities. You know, some men may move to more positive activities like other hobbies, right? Takes basically time outside of the house so that they don't focus on, you know, the family aspect, or they dive into the work, or it can be more negative consequences of, you know, alcohol or, you know, some other vice like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Patrick, what would you like to add regarding this sort of how men experience grief and other ways that they use to deflect the pain?
Well, I think, you know, Kelly Breaux, who's in Redbird Ministry, she had a beautiful line. She writes a chapter in the book for women, you know, for wives of men of grief. And she said that, you know, men are like St. Joseph. They retreat to the workshop while women ponder it in their heart. Mm. And I know during, you know, my time, I would just go and it was like my wife became so depressed and there's nothing I could really do to ease that pain. And so I would go and just write in the evenings a lot. It's like I wanted my wife back, you know, the wife that I married, and I wasn't willing to accept this fact that like, this is who she is right now. This is what she's going through. And I think a lot of times for me, it was, you know, I didn't really cry in front of her at all. I just felt like, you know, I was told, you know, as a, you know, it's like, you know, when you grow up playing sports and you get hit with a baseball, right? You're like, suck it up. Don't cry. Don't shed any tears. And I only saw my dad, I think like one time in my life, shed tears in front of me, never at all. And I think, so it's like, I just learned that behavior. Like, you know, tears are for weak men. And so often it was just on the way home from work. That's when I would, you know, I would just cry in the car, or, you know, even when we go to mass, like, you know, we have like a Honda Civic and I would see all these big vans, SUVs. And I'm like, I just felt so out of place. And we ended up, you know, it was isolation. Like I lost pretty much all my friends. We ended up switching to a parish that had old people because my wife would be triggered by all her pregnant friends. And there's, you know, I'm going to support her in that. I'm not going to let her go to, you know, mass is supposed to be the safest place. And when you're getting triggered, it's like, there's nothing I can say, you know, let's go to another parish and try that out. And that was painful. And and again, the same thing, like, so just this sense of isolation, this sense of anger, you know, I would be upset with God. I wish I cried out more to him and being authentic, but it was just this bitterness that would come around in my heart, that like, you know, Lord, like I've been faithful to you. Like, you know, where's the blessing? So a lot of those emotions would surface.
Yeah, I can absolutely resonate and affirm the exact same things with me, especially with the first few. It was different for my last. And again, it's different for every man. And I appreciate that, what you bring up and have brought up. Because with my last child, I was dealing with the last miscarried child, Christopher, who I had to hold I could see every part of this child at 17 weeks when we had the full labor and delivery. And my wife had to go through that and everything. And I remember just crying to the point where I was dealing. Now I have my other children who are now grieving in their own way and balancing that. And I remember my daughter, who was 7 at the time, just being like, so dad cries when he loses one of us. And I was like, if that's what you take away, thanks be to God. And I appreciate that. But I remember likewise having kind of this Job within me, right? I was both Job and Job's friend, right? Like there was this idea, like you have to be strong and you have to just trust in the Lord and he knows what he's doing. But at the same time, there's that anger, or there's Job's friends who are trying to justify, and, you know, and you're just wrestling with this internally. And I know that it can just be a very toxic place if you're not, if you don't have that outlook. Brian, additional thoughts?
Every man's loss is unique, and I think we can get into a little bit more of the healing aspect, but finding that ability to grieve with the help of other men has been very healing, and, you know, has brought me out of the isolation we were talking about, that numbness, and the healing that my wife needed to see, she got to see eventually, and it was good for our marriage.
Yeah. There's, Patrick, you said something that I think Kelly, you mentioned, had brought up about how we grieve as men, or women pondering and men going out to the workshop. And there is, I appreciate you bringing that up, there's that anthropological root from our being born, right? Adam out in the dirt, right? Adam out, and then Eve in the garden, right? And being able to reflect in the garden. And we forget that the first time they saw each other, it was just bone of my bone and rejoicing. And Eve's first sight was seeing Adam rejoice in her. And we forget that, and we move ourselves to these places of isolation, as you stated. So I really appreciate that. So let's move and talk a little bit about what happens with unresolved grief, right? If you're not grieving this, and you guys talk about it here, everything from shame to despair to, discouragement, et cetera, I'd love to, one of you to take the ball and just talk about why this is so important for men to grieve and experience that grief.
Mm-hmm. What the statistics are, and I don't know, they always throw these percentages around, but they're, I think it was like 60 to 80% of divorce, marriages end in divorce after child loss. And I think it's, again, you've lost your spouse's kind of, you've lost a piece of you, and you're not going to, in a sense, like you and your spouse, and often I think the devil comes in there, and where you're at war with your spouse, and instead of being on the same team, like she feels like you've moved on, you don't care at all. And so I think that unresolved grief, it leads to miscommunication, it leads to a marriage falling apart. And I think it can, and from the man's standpoint, I think it can spiral into addictions, workaholism, to forget about it, alcoholism, maybe pornography, all those different cycles that just to numb that pain. And so I think that those are some of the, from that unresolved grief, those are kind of the things that I think can happen in that regard. Or, even looking at your spouse and you're like, and that's why I can see the divorce, the aspect, like, other women become more attractive because your wife is, she's broken in a sense, like, especially if you get multiple miscarriages and you see your friend's wife having 10 kids, no issues. And you're those thoughts can come in, like, what if I had married someone different? And so maybe that those are, things that can happen as a result of that loss.
I think that's great. Brian, additionally,
Yeah, there's the marriage aspect, but then also with unresolved grief, it can really hit you physically, like physiologically. And we mentioned some of that in the book. You think of the normal stresses that occur in the body that are negative with chronic stress. I mean, it's no different, right? Because many men experience basically PTSD from this. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, and I definitely experienced this, but after a couple of miscarriages, the anxiety on the next one is just, just hammering, right? Like, I mean, it's in everything, like every visit that you go to, and you're just constantly thinking about this anxiety of is this child going to make it? And you think from a father who lost a child at a later age, let's say that it was from a boating accident, then you're constantly going to be triggered by anything that has to do with that event. And so that the PTSD is very real in child loss. It's a trauma that can affect you physiologically. And so because of that, it's very important. The grieving can help you get through that, but it's also important for you and hopefully others to support you in that, and like make sure that you're taking care of yourself, and you're cognizant of any manifestations of that stress related change.
Yeah, PTSD, that is serious stuff, and I really appreciate both of you bringing this up, because men, this is the reality of our lives. And so what do we do is we push it deep down. We push it, we put on this mantle of stoicism that we're not allowed to experience these emotions and experience this stuff. And it never works out in our favor. It never works out for the good. And I would say that just to add to it with this, you know, kind of unresolved grief is that if it allows to build up, if it allows to, which we all can be prone to it, in addition to, yeah, marriage loss and things like that, it can also be a total loss of faith. You can eventually, if you're a man of faith, and actually, Brian, something you were saying with this idea of anxiety for the next one, I remember having that anxiety both in, is this child going to make it, as well as, should I be telling people about this or not telling people about this? I don't want to burden them, right? As a man of faith, what am I supposed to be doing? I don't want to burden them with that worries or concerns. At the same time, is it a lack of faith that I'm not asking for, you know, a torrent of prayers and graces to be poured forth to help this child? And then, and I'm going to throw this out here too, if that child's lost, like I've experienced, after asking 100 people to pray for it, it makes the grief, or it makes at least the discontent or anger towards God all the greater, right? And I know we haven't talked about that, but if that's left unchecked and that's left unresolved, then, you know, where do we find ourselves within our relationship with God but one of anger and frustration? And Patrick, I think you speak about that a little bit in your book. I'd love for you to talk more about this sort of our relationship with God and how unresolved anger can be affected.
You know, and this whole dialogue, I mean, we're saying that it's good to grieve, because I think that's a symptom of the culture. You know, when you lose a child, is to be a macho man, but, and like to move on. But no, I mean, you want to let those tears fall. You want your wife to see you cry. I mean, because it was a life, it was a human life. It was in your wife's womb. And so I think, and the same thing with God is to be authentic with him. You know, we have the story of King David in there, and it talks about him shaking, you know, after one of his child dies. You know, so Brian was mentioning that biological reaction that's there. And I think I look at the Psalms, and I was kind of just maybe an inspiration God gave me. I'm not a theologian, but, you know, I always ponder, you know, that Psalm 23, you know, though I walk through the valley of darkness, I mean, there's a chance that Saint David or King David, right? He was, maybe that inspiration came during the loss of one of his children, that he was going through that darkness. And I think just crying out those Psalms are so important for us as men to be real with God. And, you know, especially even before the Blessed Sacrament, you know, I put that analogy, like rip our heart out and show it to God and say, God, like, take my heart, take my grieving heart and help me. So I think that that's, and one of the things that really struck me the most was, as I was researching, you know, we have stories of saints in the book, but with Saint Joseph, and one of the mystics said that when Jesus was lost in the temple, it said that Saint Joseph nearly lost his life. He refused to eat, and it was Mary that basically kept him alive. And it just shows you, you know, we put these saints on the pedestal, but if Saint Joseph could almost lose his life, you know, over losing Jesus for 3 days, I mean, we should take comfort in that fact that these saints, they struggled as well.
Yeah, it's not a heroic virtue to push it deep down and pretend like it doesn't matter or exist there, or pretend like you are somehow in control. Absolutely. It's just the contrary to what we actually need. Brian, thoughts on the relationship with God and your faith within the grieving?
Yeah, I think, I remember being very angry. And there's other dads in the book that talk about that, being angry and, you know, thinking like, oh, well, you know, I've been, you know, devoutly following you and praying and, you know, trying to live by the church or doing things according to the church. Like, you know, we went through NAPRO technology methods and, you know, every sort of church approved method, for conception and things. And so I think, I tend to be scrupulous, and you know, that anger is real, and for other men to be okay with being angry with God at the same time, right? Like, it's okay to be angry. You're in a relationship with him. He's your father, you know. Mm-hmm. And but so at the same time, I don't know where I would be if it wasn't for my faith in God. you know, and this understanding, particularly from, you know, these losses, these experiences that have led me to understand the meaning that suffering provides, and that, you know, without my faith, like, where would that meaning be? Right. So like, it was because I was angry, but at the same time, without him, there'd be no meaning to my suffering. And I think it would have just been, you know, even worse, right? Like the grief could have been even worse.
Yeah. Thank you. This honesty with God, I am so glad that you guys are bringing it up, because again, we put God on a pedestal, or we put God distant from us. We forget that he's a loving father. We as men often never reflect on the fact that we are sons of a loving father. And maybe the father wounds in our own life with our dad might just weigh heavily on us. And I love the fact that both of you are talking about the need to be honest. Like, yeah, Patrick, just, you know, rip your heart out and just show it to God and be directly honest with him, and how this makes you feel and how, you know, he makes you feel, you know, just be incredibly honest. And that's a level. I was thinking about this hermit that I spoke to not too long ago, where he said, pray as you can, not as you can't. Right. And so we often put ourselves in this situation of, this is how I have to pray. It has to be the Our Father. It has to be the Hail Mary. It has to be, which are all beautiful, and not knocking any of those necessary prayers in our lives. But this idea that we can only be this sort of fictitious ideal of who we think we're supposed to be in the prayer time versus just being really honest. And I think that can be a part of the healing journey. And I would completely agree with you and second both of your thoughts on the fact that my faith in God and my understanding as God as a loving father has grown exponentially. And if it, throughout this grief and this loss, and frankly, if it weren't for my faith, I don't know if my wife and I would be together, right? I mean, I think we would absolutely look at each other, because all those thoughts come in there. Like, maybe it was my wife's fault, and her thought goes in there too, you know? It's like, well, maybe if my husband didn't cause me so much stress, you know? And I mean, like, this stuff happens, and you start creating these sort of unnecessary and problematic possibilities within the relationship. But our faith can really grow strong. And we look at Job, I brought him up already, who lost, you brought him up in the book, right? I think Job, who lost all of his children, 10 of them or so. And then, you know, he didn't lose his faith, but he was honest with God. He didn't pretend like this wasn't a grief that he experienced. So thanks be to God for that. So I guess I'd love for you to talk about, and the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I learned something from you guys, was this idea of what can resolved grief do for men? That's kind of the direction we're going here. And we talked about faith, but you mentioned resiliency in your life. And I had never thought about that. I thought about maturity maybe, but this idea of resiliency. And so Patrick, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what can happen when we actually face this head on and don't pretend like it doesn't exist, or actually act as if it doesn't. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think God gives us this suffering. A lot of times it's not for ourselves, but it's for other people. And, you know, sometimes when I'm in prayer, I say to God, I wouldn't trade this suffering. I mean, of course, like, it's taught me so much about myself, all that I've gone through. Obviously, I would love to have my children. I feel the loss for my own son that's 8 years old, that there's a huge gap, and he's almost like an only child. I feel it more for him. But I see that, like, God has allowed this suffering to have mercy on other people that go through this, because I think, you know, that's why there's so much lack of empathy in the world, especially, like, a lot of us men that have lost children, we grieve alone, because there's, like, maybe a man is, like, he just doesn't want to reach out and help someone. So I feel like this resiliency, it's like, I've carried my cross, you know, with God's grace, and now God's like, I want you to be St. Simon the Cyrene to another man that's going through this, you know. And so that's where I think, you know, and then the resiliency of, I think that longing to be in heaven, you know, I wrote an article once about, like, I don't think it got published, but it was about the gladiator, you know, and it's like, he's fighting for the honor of his children that have, and his wife that have passed away. And the same thing for us. It's like, you know, we have this, you know, like, we must, part of this virtue is not only our living children, but it's our deceased children, to be with them. And so I think that those are just some thoughts that, you know, that keep me going when I'm struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, what are some of the things that resolved grief can bring and benefit in the life of men?
Yeah, I think I'd like to touch on that resiliency a little bit. I think it can be founded in humility, understanding that the resilience that you build going through suffering, which is extremely isolating. I mean, it's like, you know, you're in this suffering and it's just you and your wife, and or just you if you're not, you know, grieving with her. And it can be extremely isolating, but as you move through that and you realize that you're not being totally broken, or that by the grace of God you're able to, you know, keep moving forward, that understanding that that's through this humility of Him carrying you, and that, you know, that can of course move on to the rest of your life, and just saying that, like, I'm in total need of everything that you give me. I think in addition to that, the grieving that you experience with your life, but resolving it and accepting the grief and being able to grieve with your wife, on the other hand, can enhance your marriage, because you develop this partnership that is new, right? This new side of the partnership with your wife, of being able to transcend this suffering, right? And that's it's easy to look at the breakdown that can happen in a marriage, but I think if men allow themselves, like, if you see this as a goal to enhance your marriage, like, allow yourself to grieve and do that with your wife, because it only can really prove to enhance your marriage.
Wow. That's such a great point. Yeah. Love, right? This idea, and I mean, this is paradoxical, but this is the nature of the grief and of suffering, is that not only can our love with our spouse grow, and it certainly can. We named our children, all of them, together, and we talk to them every single day. We always do. And we have been able to have that experience together as how we wish it upon no one, and we don't wish it upon ourselves, and wished it didn't happen. It did. And that experience has grown our bond so much stronger. But I would also say with God the Father, as paradoxical as that can seem, this idea that He's there with us, that He is loving us, that it is not an issue of, He did this to us on purpose, or this was His intent, you know, to break us down. But really, you know, our love can expand within that. I really appreciate both of you, and I appreciate you bringing that up, this idea of love.
John, and you're going to say, when we were talking earlier about Joseph Pierce's story, yeah, and, you know, the great author, and he said that the moment that he was closest to God was when he was holding his stillbirth daughter. And I think, you know, he was being lifted up on the cross. And I think that's what, you know, when we suffer this loss, it's like, you know, again, I'm not a theologian, so I don't know, but, like, you know, God the Father almost could look at us and it's like, do you not think that I grieved my own son? You know, and so it's like we're drawn in. And then to Our Lady of Sorrows, like, we are drawn into the mystery of the crucifixion, like nothing, like no spiritual book you can read. It's right there. That's the mystery of suffering, of losing a child. The greatest fruit of our wife's womb is, and when that happens, it's like we're literally nailed to Jesus on the cross, and it's bitter, but it's also there's an element of sweetness. I don't know how to explain it, but it's like we're so united with Jesus that, you know, our cross becomes one with His.
Mm. Yeah, and Mary, right? Because, yeah, you know, she knows what it's like to lose a son, and I think you can grow even more in love with her by, you know, meditating on that. You know, that she's lost that, she's experienced the suffering that you've gone through, and aligning yourself with that. And, you know, to keep on the religious tone, one of the books, as far as like the resiliency and back to that, and resolving the grief, one of the books that was most helpful for me was Trustful Surrender to Divine Providence by mm-hmm. Saint Jean-Claude de la Colombiere, and then also mm-hmm. Uniformity with God's Will by Saint Alphonsus. And I think we have those as references, as resources in the book. But you know, understanding that like all things happen in God's will, but God is love, right? So it happens out of love, and there's a divine mystery to it. And through all of that, that has given me more of a sense of peace moving forward. However, you know, I say that, and I know there may be listeners that, you know, as we talk about the Catholic aspect of it, and you know, to tie that back into the rocking of faith that can happen, is that you know, for the men who are suffering to see that, right, to come through that suffering and be at peace with God's divine providence, you know, keep fighting for it, right? Just don't let go, right? Stay afloat on the whatever tiny raft you're on of faith, and just keep churning. But you know, we also recognize that some men who are really struggling there may need like real clinical help. And so, you know, of course, keep praying and all of that. But you may really need some clinical help and to seek some therapy. And we provide some sources in the book for that too, as like, you know, a check on where you may be mentally as far as PTSD, anxiety, and depression. Because, you know, not only is it okay to grieve, but it's also okay to seek help in that grief. Yeah. If that's clinical help, then get it.
Amen. No, I couldn't agree more. I think that we are psychosomal being. We are body, mind, and soul, right? And all things break, and all things are unified, and all things help build up our body or take down, right? So that is such a good, important point. So I want to talk more about these practical tools that men can have to cope with their grief, work with their grief. I want to spend some time talking about that that you guys bring up in the book. But before we get there, I want everyone to know that you guys can check out this book at Ave Maria Press. And for my listeners, AveMariaPress.com, you put in the coupon code SUPPORT20 and you can get it 20% off. So I'm going to put that in the show notes. I didn't want to go any further without talking about that. We are about to talk about practical tools and guidance that you guys can use if you're struggling with it. If you know somebody who needs this book, let the Spirit move you now to get him this book, right? This episode is not going to be reached by, you know, millions upon millions of people. So, but there are millions that are in need of this help. And so I'd strongly encourage my listeners that to grab this book, have it on hand. If you're dealing with it, it will help you. If you're not, then I encourage you to get one to be able to give to somebody who is, because there's nothing like experiencing some help in the moment, you know, quickly, not weeks down the road when that grief strikes. So if you wouldn't mind, let's talk a little bit about some of the practical tools and practical ways that men can overcome grief.
I think one of the key, I mean, for me, and I think it was for Brian as well, was just finding another man that had another father of grief. You know, I say we're like brothers of the cross and the trenches, mm. and so that's something that, you know, the more you open up and you feel like you're not alone. So that was, again, that was one of the key ways that brought me healing, because I never had that. Like when I was going through the grief, I felt I was alone. And then when I met Brian, that brought a great deal of healing.
Yeah, I would second that. And I've noted that with other friends who have lost children. And I've got two other friends that have had stillbirths. And, you know, just having that type of communication with another man and, you know, asking each other how you doing. And it's really helpful because, you know, it's a loss that, again, I think we've said this before, but unless you've experienced it, it's really different from anything else. And so, you know, finding other men, and there's also, to tout Catholic or Redbird Ministries again, there's a great apostolate out there by Kelly and Ryan Bro that provides resources and retreats and meditations to help, you know, men that way. from the spiritual perspective. And then, you know, if, you know, again, if men need help clinically to seek out what we suggest in the book, or, you know, good Catholic, particularly Catholic or Christian psychologists and even spiritual directors.
I can help with that. Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to add a couple things that helped me with my grief, in addition to what you guys have already stated. And one of those is the internment mass, or the internment, I believe that's what it's called, right, with the child. And I didn't know this with Raphael, and I am... I'm embarrassed to say, but it was something that I have worked through as well, was that I just allowed the hospital to cremate him. I was totally unaware. My priest, I'd never been informed what the right thing to do in this situation. And I will inform you that you should get the remains of your child. Doesn't matter how small your child is. It doesn't matter if it's a half an inch or 1 inch. It does not matter. You know, I actually have baptized a handful of my miscarried children. That's another, you know, good ritual to in practice that we have at disposal within our faith. But the internment mass has been just beautiful, where we just have a mass, you know, for this grief, for this suffering, actually put the cremated remains of our child in a columbarium and stuff. And so we've done that for all of our other children, and it has been incredibly healing. That provides a closure to it. It provides that the most supreme spiritual, you know, experience, liturgical experience that we have here today. So I know that that's been another big thing for me. And then I'll say that naming all of our children, that's been huge. I think that oftentimes, and I know this from older generations, so yeah, miscarriages with even in our parents' age generations, the idea of naming a child, it wasn't common. You know, it was just, oh, that happened. You know, oh, I lost one, but not actually putting a child's name to it. And I think that that's incredibly important as well.
And, you know, we do, thank you for sharing that. We do have a section for priests and for people, you know, from friends of fathers a child lost, just because I, and going to the older, you know, fathers of, that have lost children that are older, I mean, that opens up the dynamic of, you know, just remembering that anniversary too, especially if you had a friend that maybe lost like a teenage son, you know, just writing that down on your calendar and sending them a text, because, you know, again, the world moves on, but that father is, you know, that date he's fixated on. I mean, that, and so I think that there's a lot we can do in the church, and that's why we wanted to put practical advice for priests, because they, you know, it's, I had a priest come to me, this was after one miscarriage, and he just said, it's time to move on. And it had only been like, it had only been like 6 months. And so, and I just, and then, so I ended up switching. I love the priest, but I think he, you know, he never, obviously never had a miscarriage because he's a celibate, but I think sometimes, yeah. I mean, we do have to have some mercy in that they don't understand this, but it's also just common sense thing. And so that led me to switch to another spiritual director who, you know, was very helpful. And so again, I think it's, you need a whole community to help, you know, especially a father, like, because a lot of times people will say, like, how are you doing? Or how's your wife doing? And they never ask you. And so I think it's important that we remember the dads. And especially, I think our priests can do a lot better at that. And so that's why we have this book to equip them as well.
Excellent.
Yeah, and we've been in my parish having annual child loss masses. And I think that's been really healing. I've seen it, you know, people come out of the mass and just... They tell me like that was very healing to have the mass. And I know the reason that we started doing it at my parish is because the first time I went to one was with Patrick out in at St. Anne's in North Carolina. That was the first time I was actually able to just let it go and cry. I mean, I cried more than I ever had over the children. And this was after our third, and so I just found it to be really healing, and wanted to, you know, get that going for other couples, men in our parish, and you know, I encourage other guys listening that, you know, if they found that healing, to try and get something like that going in their parish or somewhere in the diocese, because found that to be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Patrick.
Yeah, Jeff. It was interesting. This is somewhat related, but you know, one of my friends, just talking about being real with God and how that leads to healing, because I often feel like Jesus in the Eucharist is the last person we tend to go to. I don't know. We just don't run to him. And one of my friends, his son is a seminarian, and he was struggling his vocation. And he went before the Blessed Sacrament and said to Jesus, like, what do you do all day? I mean, just said in a frank way, not angry at him, but just like, what do you do all day? And Jesus spoke to him and says, I wait for you. And I think if we're honest with God in the Blessed Sacrament, saying like, why did you take my children? But then we listen to that. I think God will speak to us. Maybe it's not going to be, in a locution we're going to hear him. But I think, especially praying with the scriptures, he's going to bring that healing that only the divine physician can bring. So I think those are some ways. And there was a lady at our parish. She stopped going to Mass back in my old parish. And I would see her husband there all the time. And it was because she lost her adult daughter. And that can happen. And this is the greatest test of our faith. But if we don't, call upon God and we don't have these tools in place, we will lose our faith because, God is that the rock of our foundation. So I think just we need his grace and we need the support. We need all the support we can get from parish priests to friends to help us get through this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm hearing that too. This little cry, battle cry to all of us, all men, to help others and be there in that support. And I've got stories of my own about, some people just don't know. Well, here, again, we're going back to it. If you don't know how to help, this is a way that you can help, right? In addition to the prayers and in addition to being a, just a listening ear, that can go a long way. So I'd love, Brian, you got extra thoughts?
Yeah, just on that same tone, a lot of people don't know what to say, and especially when they haven't experienced it, but just I'm sorry is enough. Like I'm sorry that this happened, right? Don't need to give advice or anything like that. Just I'm sorry, I'm here for you if you need me or something like that. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I know that we've all experienced, well-intentioned, but not helpful comments.
Yeah, absolutely. And so any other bits of the book that you would like to share with our listeners that are included within it?
I think, too, just the fact that if you're struggling, it shows how much you love your child. If you're not showing any emotion, not crying, And I was on an interview with a guy on Relevant Radio, one of the producers there, and he had lost his daughter of cancer. She was in her 30s. Obviously, sometimes men with a miscarriage, we feel like we don't have the right to grieve as someone that had an adult child, and you absolutely do. In your case, John, I think it just takes it to 10 degrees even more intensified when you can actually hold your baby. Like I can't imagine going through that. I just saw the remains of my child. My wife was bleeding it out, but I think that just to have, to realize that it's a struggle and it's not going to go away. It's going to be there until you die. Like these are the wounds that God has given you. And, you should never feel sorry if, this grief, it'll come back. It's going to come back. But the thing is maybe with God's help and this healing that you can see it, with his eyes and see it, with grace and have serenity, maybe surrender down the road, but to realize that you're not a weak man if this is bothering you for the rest of your, if anything, you're a strong man and just coping with it in ways that are in line with God's grace rather than addiction and the other things that can happen.
Yeah, and what a great example that you can give to others. I just want to add that you brought up at any stage in life. I remember my grandfather, my uncle died when he was an adult. And so that was the loss of an adult child. He actually broke his neck and it was the fluke swimming accident. And my grandfather had the strongest faith of any man I had ever known in my life. And it was, I always bring him up as an example of kind of a man I want to be. And so, lots of grace can flow, from us through this suffering, regardless of when it occurs in your life. So I appreciate that. Well, Brian, I'd love to hear any final thoughts that you have for men who are suffering or dealing with this.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to be a part of the book was to let men know that they're not alone. And because I felt so alone, and you know, we've all talked about the isolation, and we even get figures in the book of like how many men are actually, or how many children are being lost. And so you're not alone, and you open up, find that community, because the grieving is good. And, we just pray for all that, pray that for all of you.
Amen. Patrick, any final thoughts?
No, I just say, let God use your suffering for a greater purpose, and to always, you know, to keep that hope, you know, in the season of Lent, you know, the resurrection, like this life is, it's brief, and that we know what's on, our faith tells us what's on the other side, you know. And so just to keep that hope, keep praying, and know that God, you know, how much God loves you in this cross that He's given you. He's chosen all of us to share in this cross of His Son, and may we have the grace to embrace it.
Amen. Well, thank you both so very much for responding to the inspiration to write this book. Listeners, head over to AveMariaPress.com, put in the coupon code SUPPORT20. I'll put it in the show notes, but that'll give you 20% off. I strongly encourage you to get this. And thank you both for joining me on this conversation today.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Thanks for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank absolutely. You, it's been a blessing. Thank you both. So as we end each of our episode, remember, be a man, be a saint.